Welcome to the School Sucks Project, a podcast, YouTube channel, and online community dedicated to personal growth and intellectual self-defense.
We promote learning alternatives, home education, critical thinking, peaceful parenting, organization and productivity, and better communication strategies.
Please remember to visit schoolsucksproject.com to get comprehensive show notes, relevant links,
or to just leave comments.
Follow us on Twitter at SchoolSucksShow. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, username SchoolSucksPodcast, and get involved in our Facebook group. Just search for School Sucks Project.
Kids might register if all of a sudden these rules we've accepted, whether we like them or not, or enjoy following them or not, they've been there. And kids obviously do like stability and predictability. If they're gone, there's lots of questions like, well, what? My parents don't care what I do anymore. Do they not care about me anymore? So that gradual process or that relaxing process is really important to, I think, maybe avoid kinds of feelings that they at certain ages might not be able to fully articulate.
No, that's such a great point because, you know, so often beforehand, I say, no, you can't do this, you know, because I love you. I'm trying to protect you. You know, this is a rule because I care about you. I don't want you to get hurt on the monkey bars when I said no monkey bars. So we've been giving our children these messages for so many years. And now if you just drop that, it's like a vacuum. You've just sucked everything that they know out of their lives and haven't put anything back in, right?
Absolutely.
That's when chaos comes. That's when they feel like the rug's been pulled out from underneath them. It's like, what the heck is going on here? But when instead of spouting out that rule, you take that same moment to have a conversation with them. Oh, you know, I'm worried about this. The really fun thing is that so often in protecting people with a rule, right, especially our children, we just give them that rule.
Right.
And so there's no engagement, there's no relationship, there's no connection in that. There's just the spouting of the rule, and then we just leave them alone, expecting them to follow the rule, right?
Yeah.
Now we are engaging with them and talking to them and learning so much more about each other. And now we understand the reasons behind it. And together we can figure out a way to address whatever the original concern might have been. So, you know, they can still see that you care, but you don't have to express that care through a rule.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the show. Today is Friday, April 13th, and I am pleased to present what I believe to be one of our finest productions on the topic of unschooling in the history of School Sucks. An important thread that runs through this conversation is the benefits of unschooling in terms of the relationship a learner can have with his or herself, with family, and even with people in the surrounding community. My guest is Pam Laricchia. She is an unschooling parent. She's the creator of the blog livingjoyfully.ca, which is an amazing, well-organized resource for people exploring how to live and learn without school. She's also the author of several books on the topic of unschooling. We're going to talk about a few in the show today, and we're going to get right to it. But before that happens, a quick production note. During the first 19 minutes of the conversation, I had what I'm going to summarize to you as electrical problems. So I had to use a backup recording for that portion of the show. It's lower quality audio on my end, and fortunately, I only talk for about six of those 19 minutes. And then don't worry, it switches to, I would say, some of the finest audio quality that you're going to experience today. And that lasts about an hour. I would also be a total fool to not take this opportunity to mention to you the next occurrence of Renegade University and School Sucks Project Present A Weekend with Thaddeus Russell is coming up in just 1 month, May 11th through the 13th. It's in New Orleans, Louisiana. You can go to ThaddeusRussell.com if you want to obtain tickets. But the clock is ticking on this one. Remember in the last promo for this event, I said I don't like it on the radio when people end their ads or promos by saying, what are you waiting for? But now I think it's actually time that we start asking ourselves here, what are we waiting for? This is happening soon. So ThaddeusRussell.com to learn more about the event or to get tickets. And that's it. We'll be back next week for a couple of shows with Zach Slaybeck. We'll be talking about deschooling and goal setting. So stay tuned, huh? All right, here's my wonderful conversation with Pam Laricchia. Thank you so much to Pam for coming on School Sucks. And please check out her work at livingjoyfully.ca. Thanks for listening and take care.
Look around. What a mess. Any
Hi, Pam. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Brett. Thanks so much for inviting me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I wanted to start by just complimenting you on such a great resource. You run the website livingjoyfully.ca. There is just so much great information, great articles. The site is, I'm envious of how well organized the site is. Really great job. It's a terrific resource on this topic.
Oh, thank you so much.
So I wanted to talk to you about the mission of the site, why you started it, who you're hoping to reach, and what you're hoping to accomplish.
Well, really, me and my three kids and my husband, obviously, well, we began unschooling way back in 2002. And I swear, I've just been totally fascinated with it ever since. I began the website just a few years after we started, just to help people who are curious to learn more about unschooling, and to share my perspective on why unschooling families do what they do. Because when people first discover unschooling, it's really typical, you know, they're going to go online, they're going to try to search and find the rules of unschooling, because, you know, of course they want to do it well, so they want to learn how to do it, right?
Right.
So we're so used to looking for someone else to tell us what to do, to tell us how to do something. And we think that's what learning is. But really, it's so much more than that, and less, because meaning there aren't rules to unschooling per se, but there's reasons and principles behind the ideas, so that when you learn those, you come to understand how they will play out in your unique family. So understanding the principles behind unschooling is what helps you live unschooling day to day, because no two unschooling families look the same. It's not like a classroom where the goal is for all the kids to do and learn the same things, right? Mm-hmm. So that's what I love doing, digging into the meat of unschooling, what it looks like and why it looks like that for families.
Absolutely. So, you know, I've been doing a lot of research on the topic lately, and I found that people don't get really specific with what they're looking for as far as unschooling. A lot of the searches are just general information, and it's kind of a nebulous term for a lot of people, and also very adaptable. And I've learned that. You know, I traveled across the country at the end of the last year, and I saw a lot of families who were doing some form of home education or unschooling. And, you know, it looked really different from one place to another. So, you know, you talked about your family and kind of adapting principles into what works best. So what does unschooling mean to you?
Yeah. Well, you know, really simple answer is, to me, it means living our lives as if school doesn't exist. For me, unschooling is like the epitome of lifelong learning. It's a lifestyle, a practice where there is no end to learning. We just live and learn every day forever. And, you know, really, it means that our children get to start living their lives as engaged and whole people right now. But as I said, it does look very different in different families. In fact, it can look different between two children in the same family, you know? Yeah, everybody's got their own goals, their own aspirations, things they want to pursue. They've got their own combinations of strengths and challenges, personality, everything. And all those things are what come together just in day-to-day life. It's just living life.
Indeed. Now, you have a piece on your website called What Does Unschooling Mean to Me? And there were a few things that kind of jumped out at me that I thought were really important and worth bringing up on the show. And the first one really had to do with relationships. Number one, the relationship that a child or a learner is able to develop with his or herself, but also the relationships within the family and how they're strengthened through this process. So I was hoping we could just talk about each one, maybe the relationship with self or the self-knowledge piece first.
Well, yeah, that's hugely important, right? In how we come to engage with the world and understanding ourselves and having the space and the time to not have societal messages or even parents' messages bombard us and tell us, you know, this is what we should be doing. This is what we should be learning. This is when we should go to sleep. This is when you should be eating, etc. But to really understand how we as individuals tick, that is so valuable when we want to move forward and figure out how we want to mesh with the world, like understanding ourselves, our strengths and weaknesses and all those things really help us even when we're trying to figure out how we want to learn something, right? How we want to approach our goals. That is such valuable information that so often, you know, I know I didn't get a lot of time to explore when I was growing up, right? It's the whole, I need to find myself after school because, or, you know, going to university. I remember my first year of university, the kids were just going crazy. And my roommate dropped out in December because all of a sudden they had all this freedom. They had no idea what to do with it, right?
Same thing with me. I think at one point during my first year, in some kind of disciplinary engagement, I was told, like, maybe you should leave, you know, maybe this isn't right for you. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
exactly. But so with unschooling, when they have this time to understand themselves that deeply, the other really cool thing that they learn is they learn how they change, right?
Yeah.
How our interests change over time, how, you know, for a few years, maybe we're a night owl and then later we enjoy getting up earlier in the morning, not seeing ourselves as something fixed.
Mm.
So we understand ourselves, can hear those messages because we're not getting bombarded from messages outside. We can understand the messages, you know, that our own body, that our own minds are giving us, and understanding that and then seeing how that changes over time so that we're not judging ourselves too. Right.
Right. Yeah.
So that is such a great place from which you can then start learning and engaging with the world and following your interests and doing all that kind of stuff. But I think it's just so valuable and so important to understand yourself first.
Yeah. Giving a young person more freedom with time means less time spent on, I guess I would call it autopilot, right? In that article, you talked about, you know, one of the things that you didn't even anticipate finding out is that there would be all of this time and opportunity to analyze personal situations and make choices, you know, and I always just felt like, and maybe you had the same experience, just sort of being ushered from one thing to the next and never really having time to reflect. Or, I mean, it wasn't that the time didn't exist. I mean, there's less time for kids today because they're more bombarded than homework. Maybe you or I were when we went to school, but there was no encouragement to do that, or it wasn't even on my radar as a possibility, you know, introspection or self-reflection. And I was certainly spending at least 35 hours a week in an environment that just required me to basically stay on a set of tracks and move from one place to another. So there wasn't really the time or the freedom or the supportive environment to really analyze myself or the things I was involved in.
That's such a great point, because that, like I said, that was one of the huge surprises for me, was how much time my children chose to spend in introspection, mm-hmm. right? How often they would just, you know, go for a walk around the property for a couple hours, or, you know, my daughter had a swing in the tree outside the house and she would spend hours on there with her music. Like, I did not understand, like, yes, you're free to choose and do whatever you want. At first you think they're just going to keep themselves so busy doing thing after thing after thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when they had that freedom to choose, so often they chose also that quiet time, that processing time. And I understood how valuable it was eventually, because after those times, they would come up with so much insight into conversations, into situations that were going on. They would be, it's the creative connections. They would come in and talk about something and say, and connect it with like three other things. And you're like, wow, that's so true. And I never would have thought of that because I'm, you know, busy doing my things because I don't value that for myself, right? To give myself quiet time like that feels like I'm not being productive. But I tried very hard not to put that judgment on them. And then when they had that time, when I saw what blossomed out of it, it was amazing.
It might be a tough question, but can you think of like a specific example where you were really surprised or impressed by that moment where one of your children said, you know what I've been thinking a lot about, or you know how this connects to that, that just stuck out as a result of that, you know, taking time in kind of process?
I guess off the top of my head, what often surprised me were situations like in relationships with other people. Mm. Right. So, you know, if they had an activity and they would come to me later and talk about, oh, well, you know, I think she was looking to do this. And because, you know, her parents tell her this and she can't do this, you know, to really be analyzing all the different factors that are involved in, you know, in relationships and in conflicts that happen and stuff like that.
Right.
And for the insight that they would, that I'm in this particular case, I'm thinking about my daughter and girl guides, right? Mm-hmm. For this was a particular example that you're talking about, but the insight that she would come about the people involved and the surprising solution that she came up with to work through it. I'm trying to remember one off the top of my head. Maybe there was the one time, the one year too, when she was getting a lot of questions from the other girls because they found out that she didn't go to school, right? And, you know, oh, you must be bored. And if you don't go to high school, you'll never get a job. And, you know, all the very conventional messages. And you know, she said, you know, these girls, you know, were nice to play with and everything. These she could tell that these were things that their parents were saying to them. You know, they went home and they said, oh, this girl, she doesn't go to school. You know, maybe they said, well, I really have to go to school, et cetera, whatever. And, you know, the parents feeling defensive and coming up with these proclamations that, oh, you know, she's not going to be able to go to college. She's, you know, all these determinations to tell their child why they need to go to school instead, you know. And she talked to them a few times, and then she came to me and she said, you know what, I need your help with this, you know, because they just keep coming at me with all these questions and all these questions. So her and I worked together and we put together a little one-page sheet that just had like the typical, you know, homeschooling questions. Right. We didn't even mention unschooling, right? But right. We didn't even have to say that. But, you know, we put together a little sheet of the questions and quick answers. And I put my website address there at the bottom and said, you are more than welcome to contact me if you have any more questions. And got the leader to hand them out to the parents at the next meeting. And, you know, And she solved it that way. No more questions for her. And I didn't get any more questions. We basically addressed in a very upbeat way that, you know, nope, you know, it's still possible to go to college. You know, nope, she's busy and enjoying her days. You know, all the typical questions. So, you know, she came up with that interesting approach to the problem. And it worked well.
That's awesome. I just remember so many times, like, being young and facing a really challenging social situation with peers and kind of going into this, I guess, like a self-critical type of retreat. And I think this is just a great example of the story that you've been telling. It's a lesson that most people don't learn, like, well into adulthood. And that was certainly the case for me. Some people, unfortunately, never learn it, that if you have that foundation of self-knowledge, which leads to, you know, a kind of self-confidence, a self-assuredness, that type of relationship with self actually makes relationships with other people more manageable, even when they don't go well. You know, there's still, you can kind of retreat from it, but constructively re-strategize and go back. I think that's awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so helpful that way, because when they understand themselves, you know, they also understand that that's how people tick. People tick individually, right? Mm-hmm. And so when they understand themselves, they realize they can understand other people, right?
Yeah, yes.
And they bring that forward. I mean, that's one thing with all my children I've seen when they're out and about in the world, older, they always seem to be the one helping groups of peers navigate situations, you know, where they're all standing around, there's five of them and two of them want to do this and two of them want to do that. And they're just, you know, but I want to do this. I want to do this. and they are stuck, right? They're waiting for that democratic vote that says, you know, the three wins.
Right.
Yet my kids can go in there and say, oh, well, you know, maybe if we do this first and then we can do that. Or how about we can do this today? We can do that tomorrow. Oh, we probably wouldn't help to do that because it's really busy because of this, you know, and they'll just start a conversation and work it out. And boom, then everybody moves forward. But it's not a skill that a lot of people pick up, right?
Right, absolutely. So that was relationship with self and moving into relationships with others. But I wanted to talk about relationships within the family a little bit as well. Now, when you started unschooling, your children were all fairly young, like 9, 7, and 4, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Even your oldest was just at the beginning of the schooling process. But were you able to see, maybe not a night and day or overnight kind of difference in family interactions once you transitioned? And I understand that's not an overnight thing either, the transition from school to school, obviously. But what kind of differences did you see in the family dynamics once you made the switch?
That all that stuff that we were just talking about relationship dynamics, that is what we spent, I think, you know, the majority of our first year together doing, mm-hmm. was learning about ourselves, learning about each other, right? Mm-hmm. Just learning how to manage our relationships and our days together and, you know, ways to meet everybody's needs, et cetera. So yeah, it was a long process. It was a process of them learning to trust me and to trust each other, that we all had everyone's best interests at heart, right? It wasn't, you know, everybody had to stick up for themselves and they had to do it more powerfully to get their point across. You know, that's a huge shift, is away from just power-based relationships. And once you shift away from using power and control, and instead you shift into connection. And it was that first year where we built trust in each other that we were going to do that we would connect and understand each other, that we would always help each other, et cetera. And that's not something you can demand, right? You can't go up and say, oh, well, you got to help your sister because, you know, each person, that's the funniest thing. I do have an article called A Family of Individuals because, you know, I want my family to get along. I want my kids to get along, right? Mm. And you set this expectation and it seems so reasonable. But what you're doing is setting up them against each other, right? That's when all of a sudden, you know, you need to worry about things being equal. Well, you know, she got an extra scoop of ice cream, you know, or they got an extra present at your birthday. When you start measuring things by equal, because, you know, we want you all to get along, then we need to treat you all equally. That sets you down a path where you're actually setting them up in power struggles against each other.
And to measure, right? Like the distribution
exactly.
of.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. Yeah. But when you go to connection, it's about people's needs. So maybe for a while, one child needs more of my attention. Right? Mm-hmm. And maybe they need more conversation. Maybe they would really like me to be interacting and playing with them a lot at that time. But you can have conversations with the other. So often the conversations were individual within each child. It's not like you sit all three of them down.
Right.
But, you know, I can go to another sibling and say, hey, you know, your brother seems to be wanting a lot of my time playing this game or doing this thing, or wants to go out a lot to the park, et cetera. Mm. You know, is that okay with you? Is that going to get in your way? You know, what are you looking for right now? And when they understand each other, they, you know, and feel that you as a parent will support them 100% in whatever their needs are. So often, not all three children need the same thing at the same time to a large extent, right?
Right.
When you think of it as flow instead of balance, all these things that that all the kids need, and including myself, need flow in and through our days so nicely. You know, as long as they all know what's kind of going on. And they know, they can say, hey, you know what, this isn't really working for me anymore. And then you have more conversations and you try something out and you say, hey, you know, is that working for you? Even like you said, they were younger when they started, they were all totally capable of those conversations. happens.
Right, right. So yeah. Going back to that beginning, and just to talk a little bit about your background, what made you feel like you were prepared to do this? Like, I would think there would be some kind of personal deschooling process involved. So I just wanted to talk about the process from starting to explore this to, you say a lot in your work that you invited your children to leave school, mm-hmm. which I like. So I guess we can go from the conception to the invitation to the implementation, and what that looked like for you personally as a mother, and then I guess as a, what it was like as a family. But I definitely would like to hear a little bit about your deschooling process that kind of gave you the footing to prepare for this.
Okay, I'm going to back up just a touch, because sure. Part of my very conventional experience beforehand is part of what helped me too, because I could compare.
Mm, right.
And contrast that with what I was stepping into. The actual decision between finding out homeschooling existed and then coming home was a few weeks. I went to university. I did well at university. I worked as an engineer for 10 years, got married in there, had 3 kids. It all, you know, looked quite conventional. Now, not that anyone in my life would actually call me conventional, because, I mean, I was one of only a very small handful of females in my engineering class, et cetera.
Sure.
But, you know, even with my kids, even while working, et cetera, my parenting leaned towards attachment parenting, even though, again, I didn't know that term.
Right.
But I thought my kids were cool and interesting, and we did fun things together, you know, so we had great relationships, and I respected them as people, and I enjoyed spending time with them. But I thought it was the law that they had to go to school. So when they each reached school age, off they went. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was going to be great. I thought they were fun and cool and smart and, you know, off they went to school and, you know, teachers were going to go cool and they were going to learn and everything was going to be fine. But my eldest didn't mesh well with the classroom.
Right.
It wasn't about grades for him. He did fine that way. But from their perspective in the classroom environment, he was disruptive for them. So I worked with his teachers, worked with the principal, chatted with him. And depending on the teacher, he had a couple of better school years, right? It depended on how controlling they were feeling in the classroom. But all the while, I was researching, trying to find more information. I left my job. And it came to a head at the beginning of grade 4. There was a really intractable teacher, and the two of them just butted heads. Mm-hmm. So then he moved to a private school for a few months, and I was still doing research trying to help them. And I found an article online that mentioned homeschooling, and I was like, whoa. Mm-hmm. So I followed that rabbit hole, found it was legal I live in Ontario, Canada. I found online a forum, for Ontario, and I saw there were some people doing it. Obviously, no one in my circle, in my life, had ever heard of it either. But I talked with my husband, and a few weeks later, the kids just didn't go back after March break. I remember it was a Friday night. I went around and I said, hey, to each of them individually, because I didn't want them to feel influenced by their other siblings too. You know what I mean? I wanted them to be making that choice. And I said, hey, you know what? I found out you don't actually have to go to school, because sometimes I had to use that line. I'm sorry, but you have to go. That's the law.
Right, right.
And I said, it's not. I found out you can stay home and learn. Would you rather do that? That was a big yes from all three.
Yeah. Well, your oldest, who was 9 at the time, and yep. He's got to be like in his mid to late 20s today, right? Has there ever been any reflection or anything that he shared about why that process just didn't work for him? I mean, I would think, you know, I was an oldest child too. I had a stay-at-home mom. We spent a lot of time together before I went off to school. And I did go to, like, you know, nursery school and kindergarten, but that wasn't like the commitment that first grade was going to be.
Yeah.
And I, you know, if I just kind of put adult words to the child feelings that I had then, it was like really impersonal. there was a real lack of connection. And my first grade teacher was a lovely woman. She was an amazing, supportive and kind and gentle woman. And I actually maintained a relationship with her just because she lived close to me, like well into, I think, till about the time I was 30. And then I lost track of her. But great woman, you know, she did everything she could. But it was just like the environment was really uncomfortable compared to the experiences that I had had prior to going. So did he ever share anything about like just why it was, you know, off-putting or why it didn't work for him as a young boy?
That's interesting because, you know, a few observations just over time, over that first year or two, it would just be like random. I remember we were driving somewhere. We're all in the van. I'm taking the kids somewhere. It must have been at least 6 to 8 months since we left school. Mm-hmm. And he just piped up out of the blue. He said, you know, one of the hardest things, the things I didn't like most about school was that they kept trying to teach the same thing over and over and over.
Mm, right.
So for him, that was a big piece. I know another big piece at the time, because as I said, I was talking to him through all of this too, right?
Right, right.
You know, explaining the school's perspective and the classroom setup and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But another thing was so much that they wouldn't or couldn't explain things to him, like why. He would ask why,
sure,
and
sure.
Nobody would ever answer him.
It's an inconvenient question. Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, it was his favorite question. And then, I mean, you know, there's a lot of stories.
Absolutely.
You know, there's the time the principal came, looked through the window and saw that he was playing with something in his hands and pulled him out and said, you know, you shouldn't be playing. You should be learning. What's the teacher talking about? And, you know, he told her.
Right.
It just was not, he is a much more kinetic type of person. He liked to be moving and learning and understanding why, how something related to his life, right? Why did I need to know this, et cetera. So once he got out of that environment where people just expected him to do things mm-hmm. because he was told to, and he was free to, you know, move about and learn in the way that he enjoyed and to continue learning rather than having to, you know, address the same kind of things over and over again, he blossomed.
Yes, absolutely.
He was very upset, you know, not enjoying his life at all. He was getting, you know, depressed as well at that time. I think that was in grade 4. So yeah, it was hard, but it was good.
So
glad I did it.
Absolutely, yeah. So when you started with all of your children, what did your goals look like? What did your expectations look like? And I guess how, especially along the lines of expectations, how did they change maybe like in the first year or so of doing it?
I think what really helped that first year, the first six weeks or so,
yeah.
You know, I gave them a little bit of break. I'd heard the term deschooling, you know, let my son recover from some of the trauma of school, et cetera. And then I tried at about 6 weeks or so, I tried to, you know, bring a few workbooks in,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it was hard. I just come do a couple sheets, you know, of math, a little bit of spelling, you know, but when I would finally convince them to come, they would do it easily, but it took like, you know, an hour or two of like, hey, when you're done with that, come on over. When you're done, come on over. Mm-hmm. So that was so enlightening to me to see that the work was not a problem. And to see that I was actually pulling them away from so much more engaged learning that they were doing.
Right.
Right. So I did it for 2 or 3 weeks. I tried. And to me, just observing was a huge part of that first year, just to start to recognize how learning looks outside of a classroom, because it looks so different. And to realize that I was actually interrupting great learning for them to come and regurgitate something that they already knew.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
And Yeah. So that was one of the big ways for me to help, you know, move past that into unschooling. I had come across unschooling at that point too, because I was still researching and trying to learn more about it. And by then it was, okay, you know what? My husband and I had talked about, you know what? Let's try it for a year, because, you know, this isn't an all or nothing decision. You take your kids out of school, they can always go back to school. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know what? A year isn't going to kill them. Let's try it and see. They can go back if, you know, we all decide that that's what we want to do. And with that and understanding that, you know what? Okay, I've been reading about unschooling. I want to try this. I can see how even now with these workbooks, that's another example for me. I'm just going to toss the expectations and see what happens. Now, not as in, you know, throw my hands up and just let them be for a year and then evaluate at the end, but to really throw myself into unschooling for a year and see how it goes, see how it feels, you know, rather than have all these expectations. Because the few that I had at the beginning, they always got me in trouble, not trouble per se that things went bad, but they were just wildly useless.
sure.
You know, so once I was able to get rid of the expectations and just dive into, you know, living with them in the moment, oh my gosh, it was just amazing where we went, where they went, the things that we did, the things that I saw them doing, the things we did together. It was way more than I could have expected. And I would have been tamping it down if I just kept trying to get them to go in the direction I thought they should be going.
Yeah, that's actually a really good segue into. So that's we've been talking about your background, how you got started. And because you have such a great resource in Living Joyfully, I wanted to direct some of our discussion towards, you know, people who are exploring or starting unschooling. You do mm-hmm. have a free book on your website called What is Unschooling? And I think it's fair to say it's kind of like a snapshot or a sampling of a lot of the content that's on the mm-hmm. website. It's more of an overview. It's more of an introduction. But there's a section in the book called How Do I Get Started? And I found a couple pieces of this really important. One, like talking about, you know, local homeschooling regulations never seems like a fun or enjoyable topic. I've devoted very little, because my show also has an international audience, I've devoted Yep. very little time to it. I do want to cover that, but I wanted to start with talking about rules. When you're transitioning kids, or kids are making that transition for themselves from school to this type of environment, and the kind of deschooling or decompression process has to take place, you know, a lot of people might make the mistake of again, that sort of night and day swap from one way of doing things to another way of doing things. But you talk more about rule relaxing versus rule dropping. I wanted to just get your thoughts on why that's an important first step, at least as it's outlined in the book, why that's an important first step in getting started with unschooling.
For me, that was a really big thing. Also because so many people, we were talking earlier, right, that they come and they look for the rules of unschooling mm-hmm. and they hear what experienced unschooling parents are sharing. They you know, they say, we don't have rules in our family, right? They see the little sound bites, the, you know, the little unschooling memes and stuff, you know, and they say, you know, we don't have rules. But it's such a process to get there, because so many, you know, I've had enough times where people have sent me questions, you know, so I dropped the rules.
Yeah.
And things are crazy. Right. Yeah. It's chaos here. I don't know. They're just doing all this crazy stuff, you know, and that's not the point at all. You know, it's about the shift is about understanding the principles behind things and the understanding that we often talk about rules to routines, because routines can be so comforting. So it's not about throwing all the rules out the window and leaving them to do whatever they want. For many children and even adults, right, there's comfort in routines. I have my like routine before I get ready for bed, when I get up in the morning. The big difference is that rules so often follow by the clock. you know, like bedtime, mealtime, et cetera, rather than by the moment, right? Remember we were talking earlier about getting to know yourself and understanding yourself better? So noticing when you're feeling tired, right?
Yeah.
When you're getting frustrated, what do I do? What tools help me? What routine helps me calm down? When I get hungry, you know, without those, when you put those rules on top of people, you are silencing those messages from themselves, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, or and that why question, you know, don't throw balls in the house or whatever, you know. But
it's
but,
like
you
problem
know,
solving, there's, right? Like,
exactly.
Like kind of like adaptable problem solving skills and critical thinking problem solving skills.
And we have the time now for that, right? Because now we can talk about the why, and now you don't need the rule, because there's a principle behind. Okay, you know, we don't want to break stuff in our house. You know, but there's so many ways that you can do something, accomplish something, whether it's going down the basement where there isn't breakable stuff, whether it's going outside in the yard, you know, whether it's, you know, grabbing food when you're hungry or this kind of food or, you know, finding out when the next meal is probably going to be. It is about when something comes up in the moment is looking at the moment and talking about that moment, like the constraints that are there, the needs that are there, and boom, choosing, making your next choice, choosing your next step, right? And then seeing where things are from there. You know, maybe you have a nap, right?
Right.
Maybe it ends up being a long nap. Maybe it ends up being 2 hours. You end up staying up extra late that night, you know, and you have time to talk about that and notice that. It doesn't have to be long conversations, but they're always learning. They're always paying attention. They're always noticing these things when you're not, you know, on top of them trying to control them. Now they learn, oh, you know what? Maybe next time I don't want to have a nap, or I want to set a little alarm so it's a shorter nap. They learn, that's how they learn so much about themselves. And so the no rule chaos, because you're just like no rules now. You're not engaging with them. You're not building that connection. You're just not enforcing a rule. You want to move when you're moving away from rules. That's why we talk about moving to routines, because then it keeps you involved. It keeps you noticing. It keeps you connecting with them. It keeps you having conversations with them. So that's how they're learning and figuring things out. And that's how we're learning more about them. And you know what? It's how I started learning so much more about myself, because I had never really done that before.
So what are some of the cornerstone routines or principles in your unschooling environment?
That's a good question. I mean, they're just so ingrained that I wouldn't say, you know, I wouldn't ask one of my kids to sit down and say, what are our principles?
right, sure.
But they're, you know, we respect everybody's things. We respect each other as people, so we don't make decisions for each other. We check in with each other. We treat our own things and other things, you know, as nicely as we can. But we also understand that accidents happen. That's the one thing is that you get to a point where things aren't done. You know, you really trust that it was an accident. You're never trying to hurt one another.
Sure.
You know what I mean? You get to that point where, you know, things happen, but we're very trusting and respectful of each other. So, I mean, that is a principle, but we've gotten there because it works for us.
Absolutely.
Right? And we can't imagine not doing that anymore. That's kind of where your principles get to. It's like, well, I can't imagine doing that anymore.
Exactly.
That's just not how we are.
And they're broader, right? And they have easy to answer why questions. Like the things you laid out, that is sort of the opposite of so much of what we grow up with, which are like long before we know what the word arbitrary means, we know that a whole bunch of stuff being imposed on us is very arbitrary, right?
Yeah.
And that maybe this thing is a rule because of one bad thing that happened to one kid one time. Like that's really all it takes to make something that's like applicable to everybody. And we're surrounded by those things, certainly in school. And it produces, you know, a kind of resentment, and it produces a kind of powerlessness, I think. And it's a really frustrating thing to grow up with. So I think even if the principles just kind of exist in the background and they're not written on the wall, that's still really important. If something is stated as a principle, it has a very compelling answer to the why question, you know, a very convincing kind of answer.
And it stimulates discussion.
Exactly. Absolutely.
Right? Conversation. Because one thing rules do is you get to a point where people just stop thinking, right? You know, well, that's the way it is. That's the rule. You just follow it. There, you know, creativity is lost. Critical thinking is lost because they just don't do it. It's like, I just know that's a rule. That's what I'm supposed to do. And this is what's so challenging. And I think one of the reasons, you know, we don't have teen rebellion here, except like, because your parents are helping you accomplish the goals that you're trying to accomplish. What are you rebelling against? The thing that you wanted to do.
Yeah, exactly.
But so often the challenge with rules is now, if you're expecting them to follow rules, you need a rule for every situation.
Exactly.
And then your child goes out into the world a little bit, you know, and now you're scared. You don't want them to go out because what if something happens that I haven't given them a rule for?
Yep.
And then they don't have any practice at critical thinking or creativity or coming up with a way through a new and unique situation. So when they come to a spot where there is no rule, they're really stuck.
There's no practice in making connections between a situation and a guiding principle. Right.
Exactly.
Is there a rule here or not? Yeah, exactly.
Yep, exactly.
You know, in the book, too, there's kind of a cautioning when it comes to rule dropping versus rule relaxing. And the best like relation I can think of it from my own experience is being a teacher. And the years I spent teaching high school history in a private school, I did this ceremony at the beginning of the year where I would take all the textbooks and I would put them in the closet in front of the kids. And say, we're not doing this anymore. And I remember... Yeah. You know, I don't think it really fully registered at the time, but as I looked out at the faces in the classroom, there was kind of like some terror, right? Like it registered as neglect or indifference or almost like encouraging a kind of anarchy or instability to say, we're not going to do the thing that you hate, but you've gotten so comfortable with doing.
Uh-huh.
And you kind of say this in that chapter that... Kids might register that in a similar way. Like if all of a sudden these rules we've accepted, whether we like them or not, or enjoy following them or not, they've been there. And kids obviously do like stability and predictability. If they're gone, there's lots of questions like, well, what? My parents don't care what I do anymore. Do they not care about me anymore? So that gradual process or that relaxing process is really important to... I think maybe avoid kinds of feelings that they, at certain ages, might not be able to fully articulate, like how that's making them feel.
Mm-hmm. No, that's such a great point because, you know, so often beforehand, we've been saying things, you know, I say, no, you can't do this, you know, because I love you. I'm trying to protect you. You know, this is a rule because I care about you. I don't want you to get hurt on the monkey bars when I said no monkey bars, et cetera, et cetera. So we've been giving our children these messages for so many years. And now if you just drop that, it can so easily be interpreted as, because they take those messages as truth, right? So it's like, oh, well, now they're letting me climb wherever I want. Do they not care about my health? Do they not care if I get hurt, et cetera, right? So when you're going gradually, and again, it's back to that connection and conversation, right? Now you can say things like, you know, hey, I don't mind if you want to try that, go for it. That's really cool. I'll stand over here, you know, so you can be taught. So now that we're getting rid of rules, we're bringing in these conversations and now they're seeing what we're doing instead, because when you just drop them and leave it, it's like a vacuum. You've just sucked everything that they know out of their lives and haven't put anything back in, right?
Absolutely.
That's when chaos comes. That's when they feel like the rug's been pulled out from underneath them. It's like, what the heck is going on here? But when instead of spouting out that rule, you take that same moment to have a conversation with them. Oh, you know, I'm worried about this. Or you know, whatever the concern is that rule was supposedly addressing for you. The really fun thing is that so often in protecting people with a rule, right, especially our children, we just give them that rule.
Right.
And
right.
So there's no engagement. There's no relationship. There's no connection in that. There's just a spouting of the rule. And then we just leave them alone, expecting them to follow the rule. Right.
Yeah.
Like, don't watch TV or whatever that rule is. We just tell them and then we leave them. But now we are engaging with them and talking to them and learning so much more about each other. And now we understand the reasons behind it. And together we can figure out a way to address whatever the original concern might have been. So, you know, they can still see that you care. Mm-hmm. But you don't have to express that care through a rule.
Exactly. So I think in the book, that How Do I Get Started section of the book, this idea of don't drop the rules is presented first. But then that an outcome of that number one is building strong relationships, which is what we've been talking about. And we talked about earlier in the show, in the introduction to the show as well. So, yeah, one leads very nicely into the other. The third part of that section is about navigating the law and making connections locally. And I just wanted you to share your experience with doing that. I envision Canada as kind of a restrictive place for a lot of things. And I don't know what that process was like for you, but if you were able to abstract from it any general guidelines for people, most of my audience is obviously in the United States, but just ways of navigating that and managing that navigation that were helpful to you.
Well, here in Ontario, Canada, right now, it's a very great place to homeschool and school. All we are asked to do is to fill out a letter at the beginning of each year saying, just listing the children that are home, saying, I'm taking responsibility and homeschooling them, sending that in, and that's it. Mm-hmm. When I started, that PPM, that memorandum, hadn't quite come in yet. It came in about a year after we started. So, you know, I went and told the school. I found out, you know, almost most governments have websites full of all their information, right? Mm-hmm. All their policies, et cetera. So I went, found out what the policy was, phoned the right person. Some superintendent phoned me and talked to me a bit about, you know, he asked me about what curriculum I was using and stuff. So, you know, I basically said, well, you know, we're going to be, and you have a language that you speak with them, right?
Right.
That kind of educationese, you know, that we will be going to, you know, the science center and how will they be picking up reading? And, you know, it was just having conversations with the people in the way that they needed to have that information. So it was mostly just speaking in their language versus my own language.
Right. Yeah. I've had that same experience as like tutor or a facilitator when people wanted to pull their children out of school. Just being able to build that bridge between giving people what they need to hear or want to hear in a way that's, you know, obviously not deceptive, right? You're not something completely. It's more like a translation project.
It's really funny because it was something I was quite skilled at from my degree was in engineering and commerce. So mm-hmm. I did a combined degree and I spent a lot of time in my job going between the technical engineering side and the regular maintenance staff and stuff like that, in the plant. I worked at a plant, right? I worked more on the plant side. So when I would go and talk to like the system engineers that were out in the office. So to me, having two languages, two ways to describe things was typical. That's kind of, you know, the way the world works. When someone's curious about unschooling and it's like their first time, I'm going to try and connect with them where they are. So I'm going to use more like school language. I'm going to use examples of how something happens in a classroom and contrast that with how it might happen with homeschooling. When you're trying to communicate with someone and you want that communication to go well, you're going to try and use the language that they're most likely to understand.
Absolutely. Right? Yep.
So, like you said, you're not trying to be deceptive at all, but you're trying to express your thoughts in the language that's going to make the most sense for them.
Right. And also trying to, you know, meter your own hostility. Maybe not everybody feels that, but like having to report to people who don't know your children, who don't care about your children, there is, you know, this is what I've heard from people in my audience. There is some, and I felt it too, just as like an advocate, you know, for a child.
I mean, and to me, that would be my work to work through first.
Yeah, yeah.
Before I had to engage, you know, if I had to vent with somebody, if I had to complain, and do the thinking to realize, okay, you know, I understand why I'm mad and frustrated, and you know, and why this step needs to be in my life, you know, because I can move.
Right.
That would be, you know, this is still a choice I'm making. I'm still choosing to live in this place. And then I would get to, you know, all the good things about it. Why I'm enjoying homeschooling, why I'm enjoying unschooling, why I'm enjoying where we're living, what the kids are enjoying. And this is just one of those hoops I have to jump through to make that happen. So, you know, whatever work I have to do to process to get through it so I can make that hoop jumping as easy as possible on myself. Because if I'm confrontational, chances are that process may well be prolonged.
Oh,
right?
Absolutely. Yep. It's almost a guarantee that it will be.
Exactly. So, I mean, it's not lying to myself either that I don't like it, but it's doing the work to get to the place where I can make it happen as smoothly as possible.
So I wanted to talk just for a minute about making connections locally. You said Ontario is definitely a home education friendly province. Are a lot of people doing it, and have you made a lot of connections in your area?
I wouldn't go with a lot of people doing it.
Right.
Certainly not when we started way back in 2002. Like I said, I found some people on a forum. And I think we went to one little meetup in the city about an hour from here.
Sure.
But, you know, the kids didn't really connect with the few kids that were there, which was, you know, totally fine. But I think what we did when we wanted to finally see some other unschoolers in person, like face to face, see that they existed other than me talking to them online, we actually drove down to South Carolina. The next year, and that was our first at a conference, and that was our first time seeing other families face to face, which was lots of fun too.
Right.
But you know, that's one thing that didn't get in the way of my children's lives at all, because other people unschooling, yeah, it's nice to connect with them, but unschooling isn't a common interest, especially for children.
Exactly. Yes. Yes. This is the point. Yeah. So when we talk about making connections locally, and this is actually one of the things, like, I'm from New Hampshire, and on the New Hampshire seacoast, there's this new school called Big Fish. And I interviewed the woman last fall, and she was talking about, you know, making connections to adults in the community. So when people think about like connections for unschoolers, it's way more broad than just like, let's find other people who, you know, finger quotes, unschool for similar like philosophical or political or, you know, cultural type reasons. It's let's connect kids around, you know, this musical instrument that they like, or this sport that they want to play, or this online interest that they have. Those connections can, it doesn't have to be restricted to people who are approaching education the same way. It doesn't even have to be restricted to kids.
Exactly, exactly. When you connect around your interests, that is so much a richer way to connect and find friends, to find people that you connect with when you have a shared interest. Mm-hmm. And I love the age piece. You know, my son, one of my sons was very interested in karate for years. His class was filled with young kids right up to adults.
Right.
Right. And he connected with the people who he connected with. It had nothing to do with age. Same with my daughter. She was volunteering at a thrift store. And, you know, it was really, really funny. There is, a requirement here that the high school kids, before they're allowed to graduate, have to do so many weeks of community service. Right.
Right.
And so she was volunteering at this thrift store, and then winter came, and all the other volunteers were retired people, right? And one of the women came up to her and she said, oh, I'm off, you know, for the winter, because she goes somewhere warm for the winter. She said, so I guess I won't see you when I get back in a couple of months. She says, it was really nice to meet you. And my daughter looked at her and she's like, what? Why wouldn't I see? Well, she's like, well, your weeks will be up.
Right.
And Lizzie's like, oh, no, I'm not leaving. I'll be here. And the woman was dumbstruck. It was just a complete shock to her that a teen would be volunteering of their own volition and staying. Absolutely dumbstruck. And, you know, she made connections with some. There was my daughter's a photographer. There was a woman that worked at the thrift store whose husband was a photographer, and she was a costumer for like theater shows and stuff. And Lissy loved props, and she was always picking up stuff at the thrift store. So, you know, that came up in conversation. I took her over two or three times to that lady's house, and we got darkroom equipment from him, and she let her borrow a bunch of props, you know, and my daughter's hanging out and having fun with the retired couple. Age isn't a thing. It's the interest. Did you see how all those connections came from interests of theirs that
exactly.
connected?
Right.
It's amazing. So yeah, whether or not the other thing is, even though those kids, they may be children and they may be children in school, my kids engaging with them and going to their house and meeting their parents was great fodder for conversation and our lifestyle and our choices and why we do things this way. You know, they weren't isolated and insulated to only one way of living. They saw how other families lived, how other people lived, other choices that were made. And that was also part of the skill, you know, how they were so good at helping them navigate situations as they move through it. They brought the skills that they had to the relationships. So yeah, it's fascinating stuff. But like I said, I've been fascinated with unschooling ever since.
Right. I wanted to talk a little bit more, if you have time, just about a couple of learning topics.
Sure.
Okay. So a listener to my show, Jahida, she asked this question. Or it was really just a concern that she wanted to express to you in this show. As a parent, you want your children to have everything they need to thrive. And it's scary to leave it to, quote, unquote, chance. It's scary to fully trust that they will learn what they need to learn of their own volition and of their own desire. And I found a couple of things on your website that I thought were helpful with this concern that was expressed. But I wanted to just, before I introduce those, I just wanted to let you respond to that in a general way, if you wanted to.
Well, I'm glad you found a couple of posts or articles that will relate. That's great. But off the top of my head, to me, it comes down to the definition of trust. Trust to me is not faith. It's not just saying, okay, I'm going to believe this and, you know, step back. To me, trust comes from experience. Mm. So like I talked about so much today about our relationships and connecting and how that's the foundation of unschooling and learning, through that connection and being involved in their day-to-day lives, I build trust through experience, through seeing them learning. You remember when I talked about earlier how when I dropped the expectations and just lived with them and saw where things went? By the end of that first year, I had all the trust I needed in unschooling, but it was because I had seen enough times that where they wanted to go was just so much better than where I thought I should take them.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's one thing when you come to unschooling, we talk about this. I gave it a year because you need to see the ebb and flow of life. You know, those quiet times where they're more introspective and see what that blossoms into. But you have to give it that time and space to build up that trust. That trust means that, you know what, I've seen them really kind of cocoon for a while and I've seen them come out as a butterfly, if you want to use that metaphor, in that particular topic or whatever it is that they were cocooning about. But I didn't know that at the time, right? But I saw it happen. And then a few months later, I saw it happen again. So the next time I see them cocooning, even though I don't know what it's about, but they're pondering, they might not even be able to explain it, but they feel the need to quiet down for a while.
Right.
I trust now because I've seen it happen enough times that I totally trust whatever they're doing is what they need to do and it's the best thing for them.
So experience kind of relieved that concern.
Exactly. Trust was built through experience.
That's interesting because Jahida's oldest is just over 2, right? She's a mom of 2 and the oldest is just over 2. So yeah, I mean, and I'm not a parent, so I can't fully understand the concern that's expressed here. And, you know, my answer, and this even references some of your work, would be like, if you have that concern, are they going to learn what they need to on their own? My advice more from, you know, a teacher tutor side of that would be, you know, the best teacher is already there as long as it's nurtured, and that's curiosity. And, you know, I'm absolutely sure she's a terrific mom. I'm absolutely sure she'll do that. And, you know, the second piece was, you know, understanding what real and effective learning is, which is also part of like a person's de-schooling process, because we have a conception of learning. And maybe even me, you know, I've been doing this show for 9 years. I like to think I'm pretty alert and on top of, you know, a lot of these topics, but I still have a schooled mindset in a lot of ways, not just with learning, but with doing. Learning and doing, there's still some, pain. Like associated with that, like there's this flash of, you know, discomfort or
resistance,
procrastination, just because I was so effectively schooled for so long. But I think, you know, nurturing curiosity and being able to assess like what and understand what real and effective learning is along the way, I would hope would relieve some of those concerns that, again, I want to reiterate, I don't fully understand not being a parent.
The other piece that I want to bring out, she talked about what they will learn, what they need to learn of their own volition. So that need to learn, that is going to be a huge piece that you're going to tease apart during deschooling too. Because you get, when you get to that point, that need to learn is when it comes up, like you were talking about pursuing their curiosity, and that whether or not that need to learn is at age 7, 12, 25, 32 does not matter. When you're looking at lifelong learning, it's not a curriculum. It's not that learning needs to be done by the time they're 18 because all adults are supposed to already know everything, right? When you get really comfortable with the idea that they can learn because through experience, you've seen them learn whatever it is they needed to know in that moment to accomplish something they were wanting to do. So if when they're 25, they want to accomplish something now, you know that they can learn whatever it is that they need at that moment. So that whole piece that they, what they need to learn is going to morph for you. And so it's not going to be like a set of, you worry when I think they have a set of knowledge that they should know by the time they're 18. And are they going to encounter it on of their own volition?
Right.
I think that's where the worry comes from. But once you realize that that curriculum is arbitrary, the ages that they need to learn it is arbitrary, and that they can learn it whenever the curiosity leads them or the need leads them to it, and they can pick it up because you've seen through experience them do that time and time again, you completely lose that concept of what they need to learn. It's like it could be anything at any time.
Absolutely. And do you think there's any like question, like as parents are trying to like live consciously through the fostering or nurturing of curiosity, are there any like questions that they should just be keeping in their mind as they're observing their child's growth?
I think the big thing is just observing them and understanding them. So often you know, you see them doing something and you register that they're doing something and boom, then you're off back in your own thoughts or your own activity or whatever. And that does the whole process really a disservice because it so helps to understand why they're there.
Right.
Even how they got there to that moment, what they're picking up from that moment. Because once you understand that, you're in a much better position to bring something else to them or to point something else out that is in keeping with the direction that they're trying to go. So you're trying to help and support them to continue on the path that they're trying to follow, right? Their right. curiosity. What is it about that activity that they're curious about? It can be lots of different things in just one thing. You know, my son loved video games, but by watching him and talking with him, hanging out with him, I learned that the thing he loved about video games was the story.
Yeah.
I noticed that, oh, geez, he doesn't play sports video games. He seems to play mostly role-playing games, et cetera. So all these clues, because I was paying attention, helped me understand what it was that he loved about it. And I could bring more of that into his life and support his interest.
And not like superimpose your own goals on it, right?
Exactly.
Like, I remember growing up and like trying to or expressing an interest in cultivating an interest. And some adult would come and say to me like, oh, you know what you could do? You can be one of these. I'm like, well, no, that's not why I don't think. I mean, is that what I have to do? It's not what I want to do. Maybe I should just stop.
Yeah, well, there's that piece too. You know, when my daughter would say, I like photography. Oh, you're going to be a photographer. You know, all these presumptions that we make about people and especially children. But yeah, it's just so fascinating to watch them and see what that piece of the thing that they're doing is connecting for them in that moment. So, I mean, for one thing, when you first start, it's quite important to not interrupt and say and try to point out, oh, well, look, it does this and it does this, because you could be taking them off in a path that's completely different from where they were going. And now you've interrupted them and maybe they've lost their train of thought. They lose their interest and they move on. But if you're paying enough attention to see, you can start to bring things in that aren't interruptions, but they're additions.
Yes,
you're enriching things. You're not putting it in the totally opposite direction.
Right. So you can like using your wisdom as an adult to show possibilities instead of like narrow the path.
Yeah, exactly. You're trying to help them enrich things and gain more experience. What's going to bring them more joy? You know, so often in the end, that's how I ended up with my website name, Living Joyfully, because I noticed that if I focused on the joy and following the joy with them, we always went in the right direction. They learned more. They had more fun. They understood more because they were, in essence, that's following your curiosity, right? Because you enjoy that. That is where you're going to pick up the most. You're going to have the most fun. All of that points to the best learning, but I no longer need to be watching for the learning because I know it's happening if we're following our curiosity and enjoying what we're doing and following that path. The learning just happens.
Right. So was there a point, because I bet there's a lot of people who are at the beginning of this process or the outside of this process, was there a point for you where, I don't know, maybe they were teenagers, maybe they're getting close to adulthood, and you had some kind of doubt, like, yeah, but what are they going to do? You know, what's going to become of them? What about once you're surrounded by, you know, this all of these other people who are about that age and they're going to college or they're getting an entry level job or they're doing this internship? Is it possible to not feel or be affected by, you know, the presence of all of these comparisons that are going on around them?
I think most often it's work to do. Like we talk about deschooling, especially at the beginning, but it's something that always comes up because, you know, until your first child hits, you know, 18 or, you know, everybody's going to college, those certain ages, those certain milestones in a conventional life, right?
Mm-hmm.
You haven't really thought about it before. So yes, when they hit those conventional times, often something comes up and you feel it and you feel some discomfort and then it's time to process through that again. And, you know, why is that important to me? Why am I feeling like that? What is the advantage of that? How is that working for other people? How did that work for me at that moment? Was that something helpful for me in my life? just getting to the place, okay, so now comparing with my child's life, and so what do they know about themselves differently, how they approach things, is that milestone important at that particular age? You know, we were talking before about following rules by clocks and stuff like that. Age is just another clock. Is it important at that particular age?
Right.
You know, so much of that is linked to our school system, right?
Mm,
and graduation from the school system. And outside of that system, how does it really relate to being a human being? And living in the world. So it's all that processing. It does come up, and there are times when it kind of sneaks up on you and you're like, why am I worried?
Right.
Why am I feeling uncomfortable right now? And in those times, for me, what always worked best was to look to my kids again.
Yeah.
Because when I saw them learning, having fun, doing things, engaging, still being, you know, happy and laughing and doing amazing things that I hadn't thought of, even though they wouldn't, you know, may not look amazing in the grand scheme of the conventional path, right?
Right.
When I saw them, it reminded me why this was important, why we had chosen to do this, and why for us, this was a better choice.
Absolutely.
But yeah, those would come up and I would have to do the work and look to my kids, and it would remind me why this was so important.
Absolutely. I wanted to finish today just with the other part of what my answer to that question was that Jide asked, which was about, you know, identifying the characteristics of real and effective learning. And you actually have a blog piece on Living Joyfully about this. It's called Curious and Engaged. And I'm going to link it in the show notes because it is very detailed and very thorough. And I'm actually hoping that maybe I could get you back at some point in the future and we could do like a long form discussion on just this. But at the end here, I just wanted to make explicit what these three characteristics are, even though I think we're definitely circling back over previous parts of the conversation. But, you know, these three elements, just as something to leave the listeners with, I think is really important.
Yeah, sure. I'd be happy to discuss it in depth. But yeah, for me, these were the three characteristics of real and effective learning that jumped out to me. And when I talk about learning as real and effective, I mean learning that's understood and remembered, you
right,
know, learning
right.
that you move forward with, that's understanding, that adds value to your understanding of the world. So one is engagement, which is the act of exploring and playing with an idea, a topic, or a skill. So as we've talked about so much, when you're following your child's curiosity, engagement is bound to follow, right?
Absolutely.
And when they're engaged in that activity of their choice, the questions that they're asking, they're running through their head, are being answered immediately through what they're doing. They're right there. That's where the strongest learning connections are made, because things are making sense because they're asking a question and they're answering it right there. That's learning
right.
that sticks. The second is motivation, which is about staying engaged in that exploration, even through challenges when things get a little bit hard. So with unschooling, that we're all about intrinsic motivation because they're pursuing their own goals, the things that they truly want to accomplish, and they're quite willing to learn whatever they need to know along the way, taking whatever time they need it, trying again and again and again, because that is something that they personally want to accomplish, and they're in control of their learning.
Yeah, you know, no roadblock is more insurmountable than the one you can't see what's on the other side of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, well, I guess you can't go this way anymore, right? But,
yeah.
You know, I've learned as far as, and like one of the things that I've been working on, being really deliberate about in 2018 is connecting visions to long-term goals, to medium-term goals, to the immediate projects that I have, right? Like I always have projects. I can always feel busy. Is busyness really the same thing as productivity? I don't think it is. Right?
Mm-hmm.
If it's not working towards something larger, but being very clear on what the long-term goals and visions for my work and for myself are, you know, lots of the things that I'm doing right now are very difficult and very frustrating and even very new for me at 40 years old. But knowing what's on the other side of the roadblocks that I encounter, I think Einstein said something like, you know, I took this advice with a lot of like the more difficult projects that I worked on, like a, you know, a podcast that was really complicated or a video that required a lot of like new technical skills. I would envision the outcome, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And once I could see it and feel it, like if you're editing a video, you can skip to the end and make that part, you know, and say, this is how it ends and everyone's going to love it. This is where everyone applauds, right?
Yeah.
And then all those things that are like closer to you or more immediate that are frustrating or you really don't know how to figure out, you'll get through them because the ending is so compelling. And I think that, you know, this is a huge piece of intrinsic motivation as it relates to goals. If kids have their own goals, they're much more likely to persevere through those sort of short-term, along-the-way difficulties if they know where they're trying to get. I didn't understand anything that I was doing when I was, you know, in high school or why. There mm-hmm. was no why. There was no why to any of that. Not one that was compelling to me. So, you know, I was that's where I developed most of my bad habits as far as, you know, motivation, organization, productivity, task completion that stick with me until today in some ways. So I think this is the second one is really so important as a benefit of, mm-hmm. you know, unschooling. Sure.
Well, and, you know, the thing that really fascinates me is when you think about school and how it's steeped in extrinsic motivation, right?
They try
external rewards, that actually motivates the students to learn as little as possible because they want to just learn just enough to get that reward.
Absolutely.
If they even think the reward is valuable, right? And like you said, they can't see any goal. There's no particular goal. That's why school needs the reward in the first place. And like you said, when you toss those history books in the closet, that's why they, you know, one of the reasons why they could feel so off put. Like now all of a sudden they don't know what they need. Like that was the definition of their reward there, right?
Yeah,
that was the minimum they needed. I needed to know the chapters that you are going to cover and even what sections. And that's the minimum. I just needed to memorize that and I'm good. So mm-hmm. you took that away from them.
Yeah,
right? So very disconcerting.
right.
And the third characteristic is thinking. When we've talked about that, the creativity and critical analysis, which is key to the bigger picture understanding of how the idea or the topic or the skill fits into the world. And I love, there's a quote by Maria Popova that I love. And she wrote, "We live in a world awash with information, but we seem to face a growing scarcity of wisdom. And what's worse, we confuse the two. We believe that having access to more information produces more knowledge, which results in more wisdom. But if anything, the opposite is true. More and more information without the proper context and interpretation only muddles our understanding of the world rather than enriching it." And I think that so concisely distinguishes between schooling and unschooling, because at school, learning is all about remembering those pieces of information, right? So you can put them on the test. And if you get it right on the test, you've learned it. Boom.
Yeah.
And in contrast, unschooling parents value the context and the connections that surround that piece of information and cultivate a learning environment for their children where the why and the how are just as important as the what. So when they're engaged in that moment, they're thinking about it. They're putting together that picture of the world, not just memorizing random facts. They're building that understanding and that wisdom. So I love that. So those three, when you've got those three characteristics together, engagement, intrinsic motivation, critical and creative thinking, and they're all at play, learning thrives.
Absolutely. And like I said, I'll link to that in the show, and I hope we can have a long form conversation about that in the future, because I think this is a great show in itself for sure.
I'd love to.
All right. So Pam, thank you so much for coming on the show. Could you just give your website for my audience so they can go and check out your work?
Absolutely. You can find me at livingjoyfully.ca.
And the free book is called What is Unschooling? And you've got several other books as well, Free to Learn, Free to Live. Those are all available on the site.
Mm-hmm. And my newest one is the Unschooling Journey. It was a three-year project of mine that I just finished. I just published it last month. And it's looking at the unschooling journey, the parents' unschooling journey through the lens of Joseph Campbell's Hero's Journey.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Most of the people listening to us right now are most likely podcast listeners, so you also have a podcast.
I do. It's called Exploring Unschooling.
Awesome. Pam, thank you so much. I really, really enjoyed the conversation.
Yeah, me too, Brett. Thanks so much for inviting me. It was great.
have to abandon the void, ban the zero, ban the noise. Quiet sounds are picked up and dissected, all faint shadows reflected. Try to ride on waves of activity in every direction. You're the center and you're always